Well, today I'm going to do something different, and you can all blame Hannah Woolery. So, one of the things about having a couple of my students at CPLS also attend Grace is getting to overhear at school some fun conversations like this one. We were in Acts to Revelation, one of the classes that I teach the sophomores at CP, I think a week and a half ago now. We were in the book of Acts, in Acts 16, and we're talking about the jail and the night the jail shook and some of that stuff. And so we spent, you know, maybe 40 minutes or so straight, just me asking questions and us talking about this one chunk of text. And then I let them go on break at the end of that. And one of my students, Lizzie Rollenhagen, turned to Hannah and sort of exasperatedly said, wow. He sure can talk about the Bible for a long time. And Hannah looked at Lizzie and said, ugh, I heard him preach an entire sermon on just two verses. So I decided, challenge accepted, I'm going to one-up that, and we're going an entire sermon on just one verse. So you'll all have Hannah to blame for that. Sometime I'll go for just like one word, an entire sermon. But of course, I'm not preaching on a single verse simply despite Hannah, though I would consider that sometime. But rather because, as you look at this text with me, you'll see that there's a good reason for only preaching this verse in isolation. That's because it doesn't really go with what comes before, and it doesn't really go with what comes right after. So what else can you do but preach it alone? So let me take you sort of inside the mind of commentators and scholars in the Bible for a minute and turn in your Bibles to James 5:12. So let's imagine you have the task of trying to divide up the text. Right, let's imagine you're writing your own commentary and you're going to divide up the text. And so you're chugging along through the book of James and you kind of feel like every once in a while he seems to jump around a bit. And then you get to James 5, and you're chugging along, and you'll remember that last week, James 5, 7 through 11 was all about being patient. Right? Be patient like a farmer, be patient like a prophet, be patient like Job. And then you come to James 5, 12, and I'll quickly read through it. But above all, my brothers, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you may not fall under condemnation. You say, okay. Well, that doesn't really seem to have to do with being patient, so maybe it goes with what comes after it. And so you skip to verse 13, you say, is anyone among you suffering? Let him pray. And then you find the word prayer three or four times in the next two verses, and you realize that the text after it seems to have to do with prayer. And so you can do one of two things. You can either try to connect this idea of swearing oaths to being patient, or you can try to connect it right, to prayer and suffering, or you can say, and stand proudly in the middle and say, no, this really doesn't have to do with either of the two. It is its own thought. And so, frankly, the one or two commentaries I read who tried to connect it to the passage before, it was a very loose thread that they were drawing between the two. It doesn't really seem to refer to being patient, and it really doesn't seem to have to do with prayer, which actually sort of makes us ask the question, why is it here? Why does James put this thought here? So this morning we're going to look truly at just this one verse. And I want to sort of think of it this way. What single thought so stood out in James's mind as he nears the end of his book, as he nears the end of this letter, that he just had to include it? What single thought did James have for his readers that he just couldn't leave out? Let's take a close look then at this one single verse and see what James ends up warning his Christian audience about. So what one thought, James, was so important that you just had to throw it in as you neared the end of your book? Let's break this verse down, and since we've got an entire sermon to break one verse down, you'll notice we very much break it down today. So let's go three words in, but above all. But above all. An interesting question here. Above all. Okay, what do you mean? Because it seems when we say above all, it would be elevating this in importance above everything else. Which is kind of a curious idea because he's said some very heavy things in this book so far about suffering and about enduring and patience, about maturation as a believer. And frankly, then we even had the warnings to the rich just a few verses before this about not murdering. And so you got to ask, when he says above all, does he mean, but above all, this is more important than everything else I've said in the book? Well, it's a legitimate possibility, right? We can't rule it out. So it could mean, above all, this thing that we're going to talk about, this swearing of oaths, is a greater sin, is of more importance than everything else. Seems kind of unlikely, though, since he really has talked about things like murder in this book. So option number two is, above all, may simply be a rhetorical device, right? That James wants you to notice that this really is important. And maybe what he feels is that what he's going to say may be taken too lightly by believers. Now, people take this topic too lightly, and so in order to give it emphasis, he says, but above all, don't do this. And by saying but above all, he lends greater importance to something that possibly Christians would have simply shrugged off. That's option number two, or option number three could be this, that he's using this phrase, but above all, as a way to sort of bridge the gap into his conclusion. For instance, in your speeches, often sometimes in sermons, you'll hear this where someone say something like, in conclusion, or, and finally. And this idea that usually things sort of build to a climax, and so in this way he could say, above all is introducing not just this verse, but it's really introducing his concluding thoughts. He's had his time to talk about things like the tongue and about, right, not speaking too much, and about not becoming angry, about listening more, and he's sort of got these big chunks, and now he comes to sort of the end of the book, and he wants to say, attention, we're nearing the end, above all, here are my final thoughts. And so I think really, practically, it could be either the second or the third, that he's giving importance, a weight of importance, to something that, frankly, many Christians then and even today would sort of shrug off. Or number three, that he's simply letting you know, hey, here comes the conclusion, right? Here's the time for my big finish. Here's the climax. So he says, but above all, and we see, frankly, other epistle writers do this, right? We see Paul use some phrases like taloipon, which can mean like, and finally, to sort of introduce his final clauses. In 1 Peter, we have him use this above all near the end of the book, not as near as we'd like if it's only a conclusion. And so I think he's saying, but above all, we're nearing the end. This is important. Don't shrug this off. Don't simply shrug this off. But above all, my brothers. Above all, my brothers, this common address that we should recognize by now that James has used several times in the last couple chapters to signify, I'm speaking to you believers here. Above all, my brothers. But above all, my brothers, and then, in typical James fashion, he says, my brothers, and then he quickly puts a negative command right after it. He does three or four times in the last two chapters of this book. But above all, my brothers, what is it, James? What is so important that you just had to tell us? What's so important that you put above all before it? But above all, my brothers, do not swear. Do not swear. We got to ask, well, what do we mean by swear? Because, of course, we've got a couple different uses of the word swear, especially in the English language. It can be swear as in swear words. Don't use swear words, right? No swearing like a sailor. Okay, it's cursing like a sailor, but swearing works better here. Right? No swearing, no cursing. But we pretty quickly realized, no, that's not the type of swearing that he's talking about. This is more the type of swearing of I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me God. Right? And so he says, do not swear. Do not swear by heaven, either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath. So James says, hey, above all, brothers, here's the important thing that you got to catch. Do not swear. Do not swear oaths. The Greek word here for swear is to sort of affirm the truth of your statement. Right, to affirm the veracity of, of your statement by invoking a transcendent entity, right? By invoking God, right? By God, I swear this is true. I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. So help me, God. So swear, do not swear, do not take an oath, right? Something that affirms the truth of your statement by invoking a deity, which usually implies the invitation of punishment if what you say is untruthful. And so James says, don't swear, and this term, don't swear by using God's name, invoking some sort of a deity, or, James says also, do not swear by heaven or by earth or any other oath. And so it's important then to understand what's going on here. We need to know the cultural context. We need to get what's going on in the first century with oaths and swearing oaths, because this will help us to understand what is he talking about? Or what are we talking about when you say, do not swear any oaths? Well, first, let's consider swearing in the Old Testament. You would swear oaths in the Old Testament, right? It's like making an agreement. It's almost like coming up with a contract. I swear that this will be done. How do you swear? By what do you swear? Right? And you could swear by different things. You could swear, I swear by my house, right, that I will be there at 7 a.m. to work all day for you for the next 5 years. Meaning, when I swear by my house, and if I don't show up, my house belongs to you. Right? I swear by something. I put it up as collateral. And so, in the Old Testament, you had the common practice of swearing oaths either by a thing or swearing oaths by the name, the very name of God. And swearing oaths by the name of God was a sacred thing to do, right? If you swear an oath by the very name of God and you don't follow through, you are profaning the name of God. You're basically saying, I swear by God that this will be true. And then if you don't do it, you're saying, God doesn't really matter. God's not going to do anything as a result. Nothing here is that important. And so in the Old Testament, we had the common practice of swearing oaths, so much so that in Leviticus 19, we had a command. And it wasn't the command not to swear oaths. It was simply that you had to follow through. And so it said that you were not to swear by God's name falsely. So if you swore an oath by God's name, you had to follow through. And we see this command in Leviticus 19 from God to the people of Israel. Follow your oaths, especially if you swear them in my name, you must follow through. And so the command regarding oaths in the Old Testament is to obey them, to follow through with them. An interesting aside here, that this is Leviticus 19, you may recognize that James has actually quoted Leviticus 19 three different times, at least in the book of James. The passage right after the swearing of oaths had to do with making sure you paid your hired workers their fair wage at the end of the day. Seems to be one of James's favorites. So he says, in the Old Testament, if you swear by God that I will accomplish this, as God is my witness, I will follow through, then you had to take that oath seriously. You have to obey that oath, and God gives them strict commands. Do not swear falsely by my name. If you take an oath in my name, then follow through. But as we see discussions in the New Testament about oaths, we see that things have changed about how they're swearing these oaths. We see a couple changes. We see at least two problems. First, it seemed that people were willing to swear oaths for sort of frivolous things. Right? Is that cookie good? Yes, I swear. By God, I swear that cookie is wonderful. Right? That in some way they seem to be swearing frivolous oaths. But second, what we see, and this is, I think, what James is starting to attack, is this, that people started swearing oaths in ways that maybe they didn't have to really follow through with them. That they were swearing oaths by things and then not following through. Seems they were, the way that they started to do this is that in order to avoid having to follow through with their oaths, instead of swearing by the name of God, in which case they knew, right, we have to obey those, they started swearing by less sacred things, like the temple, for instance. And we know this is true because we see it in the Gospel of Matthew. And so what they would do is they would swear by lesser things. And the reason they would swear by lesser things is why? Because they really just didn't want to have to follow through. that what we start to see as we look at these oath making in the book of Matthew is we see people who didn't really want to have to follow through, but wanted people to believe that they'd follow through. And so they swore by things that they didn't really intend to keep. They would add things in like, I swear by my life or on my head. Right? But it seems that as we look at the book of Matthew, turn there to Matthew chapter 12, it seems that people started getting in the habit of making oaths that they didn't intend to keep. Matthew chapter 23. Matthew 23, we get Jesus speaking out against a common practice of the day, and the practice of the day is making oaths that they really don't intend to keep, but notice, they're really deceitful about it. Matthew 23, beginning in verse 16. Woe to you blind guides who say, notice this, if anyone swears by the temple, it is nothing. But if anyone swears by the gold of the temple, he is bound by his oath. You blind fools, for which is greater, the gold or the temple that has made the gold sacred? And then you say, if anyone swears by the altar, it is nothing. But if anyone swears by the gift that is on the altar, he is bound by his oath. You blind men, for which is greater, the gift or the altar that makes the gift sacred? And so here we have Jesus calling people out who it seems are making these oaths. Oh, yes, I swear that I will do that. I swear by the temple. And then later are saying, oh, don't you realize when I swear by the temple, that's not binding. But if I swore by the gold of the temple, that would be binding. And so you say, what's going on here? People are making oaths in a deceitful way. They say something like, oh, yes, I swear it to be so by the temple. And people are going to hear that and believe them. And then later they can backtrack and say, oh, no, 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 don't you get it? If you make an oath by the temple, it's not binding. But if you made an oath by the gold of the temple, that was binding. And Jesus says, what kind of an attitude is this? One, how messed up are you that you don't realize that the temple is the sacred thing here, not the gold on the temple? But two, why is it that you're making these oaths and swearing them and making them sound good? Right? Why do you keep trying to sound good, but with a deceitful intent in your heart not to really follow through with what you say? Right? And this is the problem. They're making oaths with no intention of keeping them, but they're making the oaths with the purpose of deceiving people. Are you blind men? So whoever swears by the altar swears by it and by everything on it. Whoever swears by the temple swears by it and by him who dwells in it. And whoever swears by heaven swears by the throne of God and by him who sits upon it. So he says, look, these weird distinctions that you're trying to make, they're ridiculous. But as we'll see Jesus call them out in another passage, he's going to say this whole idea of swearing oaths by things with this intent not to follow through, right, that this is the real problem. The problem here isn't just the swearing of oaths and whether or not we should ever swear an oath or whether that's, right, that's a wrong action in and of itself. The problem is your heart's intent. Do you say things and then you try to swear them to be true only for the sake of making it sound like you intend to do it when maybe you don't? And James then is going to give a strong command. While the Old Testament said, follow through on your oaths, and while Jesus calls out this weird distinction of trying to make an oath based on one thing as opposed to another, notice James's command is different. James 5:12, but above all, my brothers, not keep your oaths, but do not swear either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath. And James stands there and says, look, it used to be that you just had to keep whatever oath you were making, but we got a problem here. We got the problem of what's happening around you, peoples, that you're suddenly falling for this practice of swearing by, you know, the dirt on the ground outside of the temple and saying, well, that's not a binding oath. We've got this problem of this heart problem where you're trying to be deceitful and you're using this oath thing as a way to get out of always being completely honest. And so he says, do not swear. Don't swear oaths at all. not by heaven, not by its footstool, not by the earth. Do not swear oaths at all. And as he does this, he echoes the very words of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount. Flip back to Matthew chapter 5. In Matthew 5, we see almost word for word what James has said. And James, there have been a lot of things in the book of James that he's pulled from the Sermon on the Mount, but none as clearly as this one. It's nearly word for word, right? If a student of mine did this in class, I would write them up for plagiarism. Matthew 5, let's begin in verse 33. It was also, again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn, Leviticus 19. But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. So we have this great parallel here where Jesus said, do not swear oaths by heaven or by earth or by its footstool or by, and in verse 36, and do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. And James, of course, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath. Back to Matthew 5, he says, let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil. James 5:12, let your yes be yes, and your no be no, so that you may not fall under condemnation. And so we have James echoing Jesus' words and saying, do not swear oaths at all, but instead let your yes be yes, and your no be no. In Matthew 5, Jesus said, look, the reason you shouldn't swear by heaven or earth is, right, what right do you have to swear by heaven or earth? They belong to God. The reason you shouldn't swear by your own head or by the hair on your head, which a couple of you wouldn't get to use that oath, right? The reason he says, look, you can't swear by the hair on your own head because you can't turn it white or black or make it grow, right? A couple of you say, amen, can't make it grow. Right, but James' point here is, look, why should you swear oaths by any of these things? You don't own them. You don't have control of them. They all belong to God. But stop swearing oaths anyway, because the very swearing of an oath, notice this, because the very swearing of an oath implies that at other times you're less than honest. Right? When you have to say, no, really, I promise this is true. I swear this is true. Right? What's the implication? The implication is that normally when you speak, we can't trust that what you say is true. I have to swear it on, by heavens, this is true. Right? Or by the very name of God, I swear this to be true. And James and Jesus both say, well, why do you have to swear anything to be true? Every day in everything that you say, your yes should be yes, and your no should be no. But at your very core, you should be an honest person of integrity whose very words, just saying yes, is like a binding contract that you sign and seal. So he says, don't swear oaths, because you shouldn't be in this habit like others around you of swearing oaths deceitfully, of having to swear oaths just so somebody can believe you. He says, no, your very yes should be yes, and your no should be no, because you should be an honest person of integrity. When you say something, it happens. Let your yes be yes, and your no be no. And as I look then at James' desire and Jesus' desire for us as Christians to be honest people of integrity, I see three sort of applications, three situations, three ways in which we can let our yes be yes. Let your yes be yes. Number one, don't be a deceitful Christian. Don't be a deceitful Christian. The very fact that James has to call people out on this, right, gives you that feeling that there are those believers out there who still, you know, are those masters of wordery, right? They're those wordsmiths who say things very intentionally in an exact way so that later they can come back and say, oh, well, I didn't say this, right? Exactly what I said was this, right? Don't be one of those deceitful Christians who says, well, you see, the way I put it in the contract is this, which means this, so that I can do X, Y, or Z, right? Don't be one of those deceitful Christians, yes, in your words, but no in your heart. Right, where you're saying yes in your words, but it's no in your heart. Why? Because dishonesty will be judged. Right, consider the end of 5:12. Let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you may not fall under condemnation. Frankly, I think that if there's any tie in this verse to anything around it, I think the tie is right here, so that you may not fall under condemnation, because condemnation, of course, is a picture of judgment. And James just finished telling us to be patient because the judge is at the door and judgment is coming. And I think he thought, oh, speaking of judgment, you'll be judged for your dishonesty. I think that's the best tie here to anything. But even that's a very tentative tie. But James says, look, don't be a deceitful Christian with yes in your words, but no in your heart. Because condemnation is coming, and those who are deceitful will be judged. The judge is at the door. He stands here. And if you're a deceitful oath maker and oath breaker, right, one who deceitfully words your ways and words your statements in a way that's not binding, or simply makes oaths to gain people's trust with no intention of following through, beware, for the judge is coming. Don't be a deceitful Christian. Remember Peter, who, when the going got tough and Jesus was being tried and all looked bleak, blatantly lied and swore an oath that he did not know that man. And what regret he had. Don't be a deceitful Christian. Number two, let your yes be yes. Don't be a flaky Christian. Don't be a flaky Christian. Yes in your words, but maybe no at the last moment because that something came up or some excuse happened. In Matthew 12:36, he says, I tell you, on the day of judgment, people will give an account for every careless word they speak. For every careless word they speak. Don't be a flaky Christian. Every careless word. So when you promised your brother you'd pay him back and you didn't, you failed to let your yes be yes. When your mom asks you if you cleaned your room, and you say yes, even though the answer is kind of no, right, you'll be judged for that careless word. A time you told your friend you'd be there to help them move, and then flaked at the last minute, that's not letting your yes be yes and your no be no. I think even those are careless words that you'll give account for, because at our core, we are meant to be honest people of integrity whose yes always means yes, even in the little things. So don't be a flaky Christian. Don't be a deceitful Christian. Don't be a flaky Christian. And third, don't be a hypocritical Christian. Yes in your words, but no in your actions. Yes in your words, but no in your actions. Where your yes isn't really a yes, because for your yes to truly be yes, your actions must correspond that what you affirm to be true about life, about God, about the scriptures, about right and about wrong, that if your yes is yes, then what you say is wrong, you don't also do. You can't have yes in your words and then have no in your actions. And isn't this one of the chief knocks on Christians by people on the outside? Well, they're so hypocritical, and they point out that sometimes we have yes in our words, but no in our actions. Don't be a deceitful Christian. Don't be a flaky Christian. And don't be a hypocritical Christian. Let your yes really truly mean yes, and your no be no. And why not? Because we as Christians are meant to be people of integrity and honesty. As I read this passage, and as I read the Do Not Swear, I couldn't help but think of one of my favorite movies, and of a really clever moment in this movie. See, Wesley and Buttercup had just escaped the fire swamp. Maybe you know where I'm going with this, right? It's the Princess Bride, and Wesley and Buttercup have just come through the fire swamp, and down ride Prince Humperdinck and, of course, the Six-Fingered Man, the evil villains, right, the slimiest of slimy, ride down the hill, and they capture Wesley and Buttercup, and he's, of course, a slimy, evil prince, and so he's going to do something mean to Wesley. And so Buttercup says, "Promise me that you won't hurt him." And he says, "May I never hunt again," or something ridiculous like that. And as if, "Yes, I promise, and if I break my promise, I'll never hunt again," and of course he loves hunting. And she says, he's a sailor on a ship. "Promise me that you will return him to his ship," right? And his exact words are, "I swear it will be done." And the soldiers surround Wesley, and the immediate cut is, "I swear it will be done." And he turns to the Six-Fingered Man and says, "Once we're out of sight, take him back to Florin and throw him in the pit of despair." And in a humorous, clever twist, the Six-Fingered Man looks at him and says, "I swear it will be done." In this great moment where the prince, the evil villain, can look someone in the face and say, "I swear it will be done," and a half a second later turn and say, "Don't do exactly what I swore would be done." And of course the Six-Fingered Man, in irony, looks at him and using the exact same words says, "I swear it will be done." And I think James would watch that movie and he'd be like, "Yes, this is it," right? Only the slimiest of the slimy, only the Humperdincks of the world, right? Only they can look someone in the eyes and swear it will be done and immediately turn and break their oaths. It says, and that just can't be who you are as Christians. That your very person, you at your core, should be such an honest person of integrity that when you say yes, everyone around you knows you mean yes. That your words say yes, and in your heart you mean yes, and that it will be a yes, and your actions will say yes. Because that's who we're called to be as Christians, is we reflect the very Creator in whose image we're made, God, whose yes is always and eternally yes, and whose no are always and eternally no's. Does he speak and then not act? Does he promise and not fulfill? Of course not. He is God whose yes is yes, and we then should let our yes be yes. To be so honest and such people of integrity that we never have to say, "No, I swear, really, I'll follow through." But when people hear that you say yes, they know you mean yes because that is who you are. So don't be a deceitful Christian. Don't be a flaky Christian, and don't be a hypocritical Christian, but let your yes be yes. Pray with me. Father God, O God, whose yes is always yes, who is perfect and pure in his words and deeds, God, we long to be like you. Help us conform to your image. Help us to become more like you, and let us be more like you in this area. That when we say yes, we are people of integrity and we always follow through, and our yes means yes. That for the sake of your kingdom, for the sake of our witness, that people know that we are honest people of integrity. We say what we mean and mean what we say, and we promise and fulfill like you, our good God, whose yes is always yes. So Lord, help us not to be deceitful. Help us not to be flaky. Help us not to be hypocritical this week. It's in your Son's name that we pray. Amen.